Thank you so very much for tuning in to the SGT Report podcast. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. For years now, people have been setting up a little contest between crypto and gold, but that's like comparing a truck with an SUV. Both carry stuff and travel from A to B, but they do different jobs. Gold's job is to keep the value of your money safe and preserve its value. And since the events in Ukraine and the oil and inflation crisis, gold has done a brilliant job compared to stocks and other investments. So if you're worried about what's going on right now, and who isn't, just talk to an expert at Noble Gold about precious metals IRAs for your retirement. They'll get you straightened out on your options and hold your hand through the entire process. And this month, for any qualified IRA, you'll get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. Call 877-646-5347 right now to find out more, or visit noblegoldinvestments.com.
They've never sequenced this or any other so-called disease-causing virus.
How do we spread the fear more powerfully? That was the question. That was the challenge that was given to this group of medical bureaucrats and the MI5. You know, so they were very overt about the desire to spread fear.
Hey friends, Sean from SGT Report here. That was Dr. Tom Cowan and filmmaker Mike Wallach. And I have to say, it was my absolute pleasure to have a conversation with these two gentlemen about disinformation, about the boogeyman virus. And it reminds me of what William J. Casey, the former director of the CIA, supposedly said at one point in his career, quote, "We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." That's exactly what has occurred. And guess what? There is no virus. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. Did you know you can earn hundreds of thousands of dollars investing in crypto? And did you know that if you do it right, you don't have to pay cap gains tax on it? Open a Roth crypto IRA with My Digital Money now to take advantage of it. You will pay based on your contribution and nothing on your capital gains. If Ethereum or Chainlink doubles or Bitcoin surges to a new high, you could easily be doubling your investments. My Digital Money's US-based phone support is always ready to answer your questions. And you know what's better? They will give you a free $50 in credit if you fund your My Digital Money crypto IRA account with at least $1,000. And when you're ready for retirement, no capital gains tax. Go to mydigitalmoney.com now. mydigitalmoney.com. Hey friends, thank you so much for tuning in. It's Sean from sgtreport.com and sgtreport.tv here. Also thephaser.com, where we stun them with truth. In a sea of lies, guys, that's all you can do is try to stun them with truth. And who are them? Well, I'm talking about friends, family, colleagues, most of whom don't know anything about what we are going to speak of in this conversation with Mike Wallach. He's the producer and director of The Viral Delusion, a new docuseries. You can find that at theviraldelusion.com. And Dr. Tom Cowan, one of the leading voices speaking out against the mainstream media narrative, the mainstream medical narrative, and coordinated agenda of masking, social distancing, and forced vaccinations. First, Mike, welcome.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Thanks for reaching out. I know you want to talk about your docuseries. We'll do that in a moment. Dr. Tom Cowan joins us. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I have seen you in other documentaries and stuff. I know that you are one of the leading voices standing up against this tyranny. And do you think that's the best word to describe what we see coming from the CDC, from the NIH, from the Biden administration as it relates to basically, what they wanted to do was make these quote-unquote vaccines mandated. The DOD authorized forced injections for the military. Tom, is the best word tyranny?
It's an interesting question. It's probably not the word that I would use because it all depends on how you see the world. And one of the ways of seeing the world is there's this thing over here, and then there's the bad guys. And then another way of seeing the world is, well, I have come to know certain things, and those guys over there are serving to wake other people up by essentially doing such outrageous acts, like telling people to put a plastic mask on their face, that it actually, in a funny sort of way, serves to stimulate people to think, you know, I don't think this is a good idea. And they wouldn't have really asked questions like that otherwise. So in a funny sort of way, it's a kind of tyranny, and it's a kind of awakening process, which the, quote, bad guys are actually part of. And they have a necessary role to play in this.
In your view, you use the term bad guys. In your view, who are the bad guys? Is it people like Bill Gates, Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer? Is it Dr. Fauci? Is it Francis Collins? Is it Joe Biden? Is it all of these people and more? Moderna, by the way, as we're having this conversation, I'll do a screen share, friends. Moderna has requested the FDA give authorization for COVID vaccines for kids under six. So the attack, I call it a war against humanity with a bioweapon. The attack, Tom, is unrelenting. Who are the bad guys and why are they all on the same page when we know what is true now about this thing by looking at the VAERS database, the VAERS reporting database, which the mainstream media continues to ignore. So who are the bad guys and what motivates them?
Well, if that question is for me, I think even though I said I'd be happy to try to answer anything, I don't really think it helps to comment on other people's motivation. It doesn't matter anyways what the motivation is. All that matters for us is looking at the facts, looking at the science, looking at the evidence. And as I've said over and over again, the only possible conclusion that anybody would come to if they do that and is that there actually is no SARS-CoV-2, that's the virus. There are no viruses that cause disease. And those are the facts. And then you can start trying to unravel, well, how did we end up thinking this? And, you know, maybe who's behind it and what their motivations are. But that, to me, is not the place to start.
Mike, why did you make this docuseries? Let me do a screen share. And you tell us what motivated you to make this docuseries. We continue to hear from people like Fauci that they just follow the science. So masking mandates, that's just good science. Lockdowns, that's just good science. And recently, Fauci has basically stated that what's going on right now in Shanghai, in China, that's not off the table here. He thinks to some degree that's a good idea based on the science, locking people down to prevent the virus from spreading. Is there a virus at all? Tom says no.
There's certainly no scientific proof that a virus exists. And that was so shocking to me when I realized that I felt like I had to tell this story because the mainstream media wasn't telling this story, and even the alternative media seemed either ignorant or for some other reason wasn't letting this get out there. And the science is so overwhelming, it's so powerful when you actually dig in and look at it. And you know, that was very moving to me when I saw all these scientists and all these doctors who were simply digging in and reading the actual papers and taking them apart and thinking in a very common sense, open way. To me, it's just an incredible story. You know, I originally got into this into just thinking about the medical field when my wife got sick when she was 30. And the experiences we had around that, it was really eye-opening. And then ever since then, I've been, you know, just keeping an open mind about what the medical field tells us. You know, I had come to learn over the years that the history of disease was nothing like what we were being told. But I didn't, you know, I didn't understand the bigger picture. And when I got to speak to people like Tom and the other doctors and scientists who had spent their careers looking at this very carefully and could explain it very easily, I just thought, you know, if the media is not going to cover it, well, it's actually a great opportunity for me as a filmmaker to go out and tell this story. And as Tom said, you know, whether they believe this as a, you know, whether the top people are cherry picking science because they're deluded or they're evil, it almost doesn't matter. What matters is that we on the ground can recognize that and not run along with their cultish beliefs, whether they believe it themselves or not. You know, the question is, how do we respond as human beings? And to be able to stand firmly in real scientific inquiry and understand what the conversation really is about, it's really powerful.
The viral delusion, the tragic pseudoscience of SARS-CoV-2, and the madness of modern virology. Tom, has COVID ever been isolated?
Well, COVID is the disease, so-called. And so the question is, has a virus called SARS-CoV-2 ever been isolated? COVID, you can't isolate. It's just the name of a syndrome. So it, of course, depends on what you mean by isolation. Now, to most people, including the dictionary, isolation means you have a complex mixture and then you separate one of the components and then you have just that component. So for instance, one example I use is in my silverware drawer, I have one cork that corks up a wine bottle. So if I wanted to isolate the cork, I would look through the silverware drawer and take out the cork, and then I would show you that I have only the cork. And then if I wanted to find out what the cork is made of, I could analyze the cork. And if I wanted to find out what the cork does, since I have only the cork, I could try to, you know, stick it in bottles or cut my hair with it and see what it does. So that's what 99% of human beings mean by isolation. Now, what a virologist means by isolation is they isolate, they isolate the alleged virus from the patient. In other words, they take that silverware drawer and they dump it out into a box and add a whole bunch of other silverware and chopsticks and corks and everything else, grind that up in a big blender, analyze what remains, and they call that isolation. So I will let people choose which one they think is correct. The only thing I can tell you is, if you think about it like that, you see, the problem with virology is people think it's so complicated that it doesn't apply to how we usually see the world. Usually, if you want to know what a single thing does, like a cork or a scissors, you take that thing by itself and find out what it's made of and what it does. You know that if you didn't do that, you will never know what that thing is made of. That's just logic and common sense. But no virologist has ever isolated in that sense or purified and has only that thing called a pathogenic virus, not with SARS-CoV-2, not with measles virus, not with HIV, not Ebola, not smallpox, not chickenpox, none of them. Therefore, we can't say, A, whether they exist, or B, what they're made of, or C, what they do. Just like if you just grind up the silverware drawer, you will never be able to say what a cork is, what it's made of, or what it does.
Yeah, and that's very interesting, isn't it? Because the powers that ought not be would label you a misinformation specialist for saying what you just said. And the administration just formed, I should say, the Department of Homeland Security has just formed their new Disinfo Governance Board to help rein in people like us that have conversations like these. Mike, I want to go back to your website and I want to show this little boy wearing this mask. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, if I can just say, so here's the challenge. If anybody can show me a paper, you know, a published paper saying they took a so-called disease-causing virus from a sick person, isolated it, purified it in the way we commonly understand that, and then showed what it's made of and causes certain disease, I will retract everything I've said over the last 2 years. Just one paper, and I'm done. Because I know that it doesn't exist.
Well, if that's the case, and believe me, my audience agrees with you, this is all propaganda. And by the way, under the Obama administration, they amended the Smith-Mundt Act in 2012, which now allows the U.S. government to use propaganda domestically, where previously that was quote unquote illegal. So this is all, in my view, propaganda. Mike, this little boy here that you picture wearing this ridiculous mask, even if we were to believe that there was a virus known as COVID-2, this mask would do nothing to prevent that virus from getting into his nasal passages. So let's talk about the masking in the theater of masking. Fauci likes to say he follows the science. What is the science behind making a little boy like this wear a mask like that?
The science is clear, right? There are numerous studies have been done that show that masking doesn't affect positively, the prevention of disease, right? But it's just, just countless studies, some study after study after study after study after study. The only thing after 2 years of the CDC being, confronted with the actual, record of papers that showed that over and over and over again, is they finally, went all the way to, I think it was Bangladesh, and did a study there where the air pollution levels are just, out of control. And they managed, for the first time in scientific history to show that people who wore masks, were like the tiniest bit, disease was a little bit less prevalent among them, but they didn't control for air pollution, which is, it's just like a massive thing. But you don't even have to get there. Once you understand that there is no virus, once you understand there's no scientific reason to believe in the existence of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, the whole basis of masking goes away. The whole thing's a joke. But I think it's obviously more pernicious than that, because it was it functioned as a marketing game. So, so long as the CDC could scare everybody into wearing masks, everybody was a walking advertisement for the fear that took over the world. And, as we talk about it just a tiny bit in the doc, because we really focus on the scientific papers, but we talk about the role of that fear a little bit. I mean, we even had, it came out publicly that in England, the MI5, the British intelligence services, had participated with medical bureaucrats. They had sat down and asked, each other, how do we spread the fear more powerfully? That was the question. That was the challenge that was given to this group of medical bureaucrats and the MI5. So they were very overt about the desire to spread fear. And, again, you can question their intentions. You could certainly say, well, they just wanted to spread fear because they were scared of the virus. But you know, it's following that cult mentality of believing in this superstition that causes all the problems in the first place. So whether they were evil and wanted to spread fear, or whether they, you know, were just spreading fear for the good of humanity in their eyes, you know, participating in that is it's total madness. And you know, hopefully, as Tom said, it's such insanity that it's actually woken a lot of people up to how far off the medical bureaucracy is from reality, and how unhelpful they are to people's health.
Yeah. Anybody that has two brain cells to rub together is waking up. Sadly, there's still a lot of sheeple, though, that will stand in line to get their booster. And I want to ask you in a second, Mike, what you think the agenda is here, the real agenda. But Tom, if they've never isolated this virus, this quote unquote virus at all, how are they identifying new variants? They love to fearmonger about these new variants. So how are they identifying that?
So in order to understand that, you have to understand how they do a, quote, genetic sequence. So first of all, let me make a statement. No so-called virus, no disease-causing virus has ever been sequenced. Now, there are literally thousands and maybe millions of papers claiming to have sequenced this or that virus. And there's over a million, I think maybe 3 million or 4 million different SARS-CoV-2 sequences, they say. So what is the basis of my saying they've never sequenced this or any other so-called disease-causing virus? So sequencing means you take an organism. And remember, a virus is an organism, right? That's what we're told. It has a protein coat, we're told, and a piece of RNA or DNA in the inside. So the way you sequence, the word sequence means you isolate, purify that particle, you take out the genome, and let's imagine it's a page of words. Once you have the page of words, you can go and say, what are the letters that make up those words? So if it's the Big Bang, the first letter is T-H-E space B-I-G space B-A-N-G. That's called sequencing. The problem is, since they've never isolated or purified the virus, they've never also taken out a whole genome and sequenced it. So here's what they did. They took a snot from somebody who was sick with something they didn't recognize. So that snot or mucus contains billions of pieces of genetic material from the person who's sick, from bacteria, from fungus, and possibly from viruses. They then chopped that up into little pieces, and then they threw away some based on what they said was human versus, quote, viral. And then they assembled that in the computer into over a million different possibilities. And then they chose the longest one, and they said, that's the genome. Now, that is not sequencing, that's assembly. Because that sequence of 27,000 base pairs never exists in the snot of the person. Now, once they do that once, that becomes the so-called wild type or the reference genome. And everybody who does it after that uses that as the base or the reference, and they take their own sample, put it into the computer. It makes a similar copy. They add some base pairs in the gaps. And so every time they do it, they get a slightly different result. And if a million times it's done, you get a million different genomes, and some of them you call variants of interest. None of those sequences ever exist in any living human or any other organism. None of those full genomes ever are found in the, you know, any biological fluid of any sick person. So they're all so-called in silico, meaning in the computer genomes. And the way your listeners should understand this, if I gave you a page from, you know, Dostoevsky, you could get the sequence of the letters. If I gave you 10 million letters and said, come up with the page, suddenly it looks different, right?
Right.
You might ask me which page, and I say, I'm not telling you which page. And obviously everybody would come up with a different page because there's no standard there. And that's how they came up with a sequence of a virus. It is not the way any of us would find out the sequence of anything. It's just make-believe, done in a computer, has no relationship to the reality of what is found in an actual organism.
Okay, so my follow-up question is this. If they've never isolated or purified the virus, then what on earth is this quote-unquote vaccine for? How did they develop it to protect us against a virus that doesn't exist? And if that's the case, the virus doesn't exist, then what is the quote-unquote vaccine actually for?
Well, the facts of the matter, so they have published genomes, right? 20,000 or so base pairs. That's a sequence of nucleotides. They say that's the genome. They say, without any evidence, that it's this part of it that makes you sick. It's the so-called spike protein. So they, in the computer, make that sequence, and then they put that sequence, they synthesize that artificial in the computer sequence, and allegedly put that sequence, you know, synthesize it in a culture, and they make millions of copies of that. They put those in stabilized lipid nanoparticles or other vectors, and they inject that into you supposedly so that you make antibodies against that piece of that sequence, which has never been connected to an organism. So what's the purpose of that? I mean, God only knows, but it's not to make you not sick. I know that.
Friends, thank you so very much for tuning in to the SGT Report podcast. This is a perfect time for a quick break. For years now, people have been setting up a little contest between crypto and gold, but that's like comparing a truck with an SUV. Both carry stuff and travel from A to B, but they do different jobs. Gold's job is to keep the value of your money safe and preserve its value. And since the events in Ukraine and the oil and inflation crisis, gold has done a brilliant job compared to stocks and other investments. So if you're worried about what's going on right now, and who isn't, just talk to an expert at Noble Gold about precious metals IRAs for your retirement. They'll get you straightened out on your options and hold your hand through the entire process. And this month, for any qualified IRA, you'll get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. Call 877-646-5347 right now to find out more, or visit noblegoldinvestments.com. Yeah. Mike, this is very nefarious in my view, this agenda. There's nothing good about it. There's nothing benevolent about this. This is pure malevolence in my view from Pfizer, which was working with the FDA to try to cover up all of their paperwork and data associated with the mRNA quote-unquote vaccine for 75 years. Mike, what do you think the agenda is here? What is this mRNA product actually for?
You know, I think there are a lot of agendas at work. You know, I think one agenda, you know, that the virologist Stefan Lanka pointed out to me is that, you know, for decades, there's been just an extraordinary amount of money that's been dumped into mRNA technology. and the in the hopes that you know, this sort of new era of medicine would actually be functional, and they could actually make money selling you know, drugs based on this stuff. And they hadn't come out with anything. And you know, I can't even imagine how much money was really poured into this, you know, going all the way back to the early 90s, you know, billions and billions and billions, tens of billions of dollars. And so I think that there was a sort of a, on, you know, one of the agendas, to me, it seems that there was a rising sense that they had to come out with a product, and they had to sort of usher in this new era of medicine. And we see it now. We see, you know, that they're trying to sell, oh, mRNA, you know, shots for this and for that. And you can even find, you know, Fauci on camera talking about how they, you know, they want to move past the scientific paradigm that they were in just, you know, 3 years ago, because it's essentially the same. Everything's almost the exact same as it was in the 1950s. And we talk about, you know, what was it that emerged in the 1950s? And, you know, Tom's very eloquent on this. It's just outrageous when you actually understand what they cooked up, you know, back in 1953 and 1954, and sold to the public as good science and good health. And you know, even the medical bureaucrats themselves were sort of frustrated that they hadn't been able to come up with anything else to offer. So I think that part of this is the kind of the normalization of this new era of medicine. But, you know, are there other, you know, aspects of the biosecurity state that they're ushering in? You know, there's certainly reasons to believe that there are. I mean, you know, the fact that they're pushing this so hard in the face of all the science, which says this is ridiculous. So, you know, is this an attempt to sort of tag and control people? You know, possibly. Does this have, you know, economic underpinnings about changing, you know, the whole way that the economy works? If you look at like the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset and all of that, and, you know, their attempt to digitize everything and literally change the way companies can operate. I mean, all of that is possible. It's certainly, they're very outspoken about wanting to do that. You know, to me, and what we focus on in the film is the method, whatever their agenda is, the method has been to scare people about, you know, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, the so-called SARS-CoV-2 virus, the so-called variants, and then the whole litany of other variants, of, you know, other kinds of viruses and that have come along and that they say will come along and will come back. And, you know, you just see it constantly in the news. It's just this uber boogeyman that's constantly brought out to instill fear. Whether it's, you know, a new strain of bird flu or a new swine flu or a new Ebola or whatever it is that they're constantly trying to bring up to sell the fear. You know, what I want to get out there to people is this is not based in science, that this is not based in common sense, that if you actually can get past the obscurity that shrouds the virology papers that are put out as the justification for it all, then you can see that the emperor's not wearing any clothes, and you don't have to be scared of all this stuff. The reasons for disease that we are aware of as humanity, as Tom has pointed out time and again, are far more, it's far more compelling to understand the reasons that we get sick are because we're drinking, you know, toxic water, we're breathing in polluted air, we're eating food that that is, both unhealthy, grown in soil that's been, doused with all sorts of chemicals and lost, the ability to provide proper nutrition. There's just, these are the causes of disease that we know about, but our medical bureaucracy refuses to look at. And instead, they're constantly raising the boogeyman of the virus. And that in order to do that on such a gigantic level, over the last 2 years, they had to really expose all of the, all of the paperwork behind that. And so it's opened up an opportunity for us as a society to actually read and understand that this is not logical. You can see it for yourself. You can actually read it, and you can listen to Tom and Andy and Stefan and all these incredible scientists break the whole thing down for you, so that what has been sold as this, trust the science, and we know better than you, and we're smarter than you, and you're arrogant to even thinking about this. You don't have to believe any of that. You have a right to think and to process this information for yourself. And when you do, it's just absolutely shocking what a canard it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just say,
John,
too.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say they don't want people to think. And I'll follow up with that in a second. That's the point. We can think. We want our neighbors and colleagues to think. But the powers that ought not be don't want people to think, so much so that in California, they passed SB 277, forcing compliance to vaccinate your children if you want your kids to go to school. So to hell with the thinking, you're just going to have to do it if you want to school your kids. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, let me try to make this question about the mRNA, bring it to something that I think people will be able to understand. So let's say, and Sean, maybe you can even answer these questions. Let's say I had an idea and I was going to come up with a new pencil, right? A new and better pencil. And I said I had a new manufacturing process to make new and better pencils. Now, I'm asking you for $500,000 to invest. Do you have any questions for me before you give me the money?
Yeah, why do we need a new and better pencil? Mine works just fine.
Yeah, but let's say it's a really better pencil. Just sort of trust me on that. Most people would say at that point, can I see the pencil? Right?
Right.
And can I see how you made the pencil? Because otherwise, I don't even really know there is a new pencil. And to your question, why do we need a new pencil? The reason I'm saying this is because mostly that's how people think. You don't, if somebody says I have a new or different product, you say, let me see it. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is the theory of an mRNA vaccine, so-called, is that mRNA is translated, meaning made, into proteins like antibodies, and those antibodies, a spike protein. So you give somebody an mRNA and that codes for a spike protein. And so you make all these spike proteins and then you make antibodies against the spike protein and then you're immune. That's the point. In other words, the key thing is if I give you mRNA, that is the code for making the spike protein. Now, the logical question would be, can I see that this works? In other words, show me 1,000 people who you gave nothing, you injected them with saline, and then 1,000 people you gave mRNA, and they should have wildly different levels of spike protein, right? Because that's the whole point. And if you can, and so here's the thing, we, meaning a bunch of people, have looked for any study showing that if you give somebody an mRNA code for a spike protein, they have 100 or 10 or 1,000 or 5,000 times the amount of spike protein in their blood or urine or tissues. And frankly, I can't find any. In fact, I'm not even sure that they even did it. Now, they must have done it some point, but I don't know if Mike has ever seen a published study showing I give this mRNA and here's how much spike protein I make depending on the dose, and here's how long it lasts, and here's how many antibodies. There's none of that, which means we don't actually have any evidence that injecting somebody with an mRNA sequence makes them make X number of copies of that protein. That's even the basic. They can't even say, show me 1,000 pencils. If you're going to want me to invest, I want to see that you can make pencils. No, I'm not going to show you that I can make even one pencil. Well, if you hear that, except with virology, when most people's like mind shuts off, like I don't understand what they're saying. But if you hear that in any other context, I'm going to make bathing suits. Okay, show me the bathing suit. No, you can't see the bathing suit. Well, then you say, I don't believe you can, that there is a bathing suit, or I don't know why you think it's a better bathing suit. My point is, if we did the same kind of thinking with virology, like Mike says, you would realize it's just illogical, irrational nonsense. Nobody would sell a product that they haven't proved even makes what they say it does.
Right.
You wouldn't do that.
Right. Well, beyond that, though, is the fact that they won't reveal what's in these quote-unquote vaccines.
Right.
So there's that, and the component of a 40% spike in deaths, according to the one insurance CEO, 40% spike in deaths of people between the ages of 18 and 64 over the past year. And the VAERS reporting database indicates nearly 30,000 dead people in this country alone who took the shot. So again, it gets me back to the idea of something very nefarious going on here as it relates to what is in these things.
Right. But all you have to do is start with why, because once you realize that the process that every other person would do in every other situation hasn't been done, then you're home free, because then you can start asking, so what are they putting in these things? Like, what is the effect, and et cetera? So that becomes easy, because you already know that the logical, rational approach, as far as publishing anything, just hasn't been done. I mean, maybe I haven't seen it, but I don't know if Mike has seen any of these, but.
I haven't seen any. I haven't seen that any proof that they're actually pulling off what they claim to be pulling off whatsoever. The point is you can make it 100 different ways. I mean, even in the studies that were submitted to the FDA for the approval of this thing, you had more deaths, you know, in the mRNA shot group than you had in the placebo group. And in any other situation, that would be an obvious sign that this is not good for your health, right? If more people die when you give them the shot, then when you don't give them the shot, well, then you don't give them the shot. But what they do is every time they come up with something that doesn't fit the narrative, you see these scientific explanations start, you know, pseudoscientific explanations start popping in, and they go, oh, well, you know, the thing is that, you know, that this group must, the people must have died for other reasons that's not connected to the shot. And, you know, the data is staring you right in the face. So I agree that there is, there's obviously an agenda that is not good for you. The particular way in which it's not good for you, or the particular motivations, we could do some Kremlinology, but it's anybody's guess.
So, Mike, when you mentioned 1950s, 1953, are we talking about the advent of this new pseudoscience of vaccinations? Is that what we're talking about? Because it's all part of the marketing arm of Big Pharma to push and profit from vaccinations. Meanwhile, parents who question these things and don't want to abide by SB 277 mandatory vaccinations in California for your kids, it might be that they bump against it because they know there's things like aluminum, formaldehyde, aspartame, thimerosal, which is a mercury-based preservative in these quote-unquote vaccines. Tom, is that what happened in the 1950s? Is that the advent of the vaccine age?
No. What happened in the 1950s, there was a couple different eras of virology. One was the earliest where they were claiming that, this is 1900, that they proved the existence of viruses because they took diseased tissue, like spinal cord tissue from somebody who had polio, and they filtered it and injected it into a monkey's brain, and that monkey got sick, and that proved it was a virus. So that was the first era. They didn't think they would ever be able to see something that was that small. And then in the 30s, they invented an electron microscope, and they could clearly see things that were the size and morphology of a virus. So they went looking in diseased tissue, like chickenpox lesions, or, you know, fluid from somebody, a child with measles or polio nervous system. They went looking for the entity, the thing called a virus, the particle, and they couldn't find it. Never. So then they were going to all go home and be plumbers and carpenters and do, you know, useful things. But then a guy came along named Enders and said, I know another way to prove that there exists. And he basically took fluid from a sick bunch of sick children with measles, and he inoculated that on monkey kidney cells, and the kidney cells broke down. And he said, that proves the virus killed the monkey kidney cells. And that became the proof for the existence of the virus. And to this day, that remains the proof. The problem was, he also did it without anything from anybody with measles. And the thing broke down in exactly the same way. And he actually had the sense to say, I think somebody should check this someday. Unfortunately, nobody did, and that became the proof of the existence of these particles called pathogenic viruses. And one of the things we did, meaning Stefan and a few of us, is we reran that experiment and showed that the actual conditions of doing a culture is what breaks down the culture, not any so-called pathogenic virus in the fluid of the sick people or people with COVID or anything.
Well, it's just fascinating. The entire conversation's fascinating. And I know you can't necessarily name the bad guys or describe the motivations of these people, Tom. That's just conjecture. But I am of the firm belief that Dr. Anthony Fauci knows exactly what he's doing, probably fully understands everything that has been shared in this interview as being true. And in my view, he literally is aligned against we the people and humanity. I think this is an anti-human plan, an anti-human agenda. That's my view. Mike, let's look at the website here. You can comment, by the way, while I load the website on what I just said.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the people that we spoke with is the journalist Celia Farber, who's been covering Fauci going all the way back to the 80s. And it was actually the untold story of AIDS that really moved me to just say, all right, I'm going to make this film. You know, once you sell people on the idea that there's a new evil virus that's come to get them, it really opens up some terrible possibilities. And what I had discovered was that there had been this huge outcry from the scientific community about what Fauci and the NIH and the CDC were saying about AIDS, going back to the mid 80s, when they first announced that they claimed that HIV had been found, this new virus called HIV had been found, and that it was the cause of AIDS. And when you talk about the dangerous agenda that's at work, you know, Celia Farber, the journalist that we spoke to, one of her big articles for Harper's magazine was following a young mother. Well, she was pregnant, who had been diagnosed according to these tests that had no validity whatsoever as having HIV, right? So she was said to be HIV positive. And so she was a poor woman, and she was immediately enrolled in an experimental program that the NIH was overseeing, in which they began to douse her with AZT. And even though she was perfectly healthy, she had just tested quote unquote positive for quote unquote HIV. And so, you know, she was told she was going to die, and but that they could help her with their new experimental medicine. And what they did is they watched as her kidney failed.
Right.
And every week or 2 weeks, she would go into the doctor and she would get her quote unquote medicine, and they would run the tests and they would see that her kidney was failing more and more and more and more. And they never stopped the test. They just watched her die. And it wasn't just her. The story came out again a little while ago about a whole group of orphans in the Bronx where the same game was played, where all these perfectly healthy orphans were tested for quote unquote HIV, and their quote unquote tests came back. And so all the orphans were told that they were going to die, but they were going to enroll them in an experimental program. And once again, what happened was all these perfectly healthy little children, the vast majority of them were given this, you know, new experimental procedures, and passed away. Even one little girl was perfectly healthy, while all the other perfectly healthy children began to get sick, and they were told, "Oh, it's not the medicine; it's just AIDS has suddenly hit you." There was one girl who had remained healthy and had not been put on the medicine. And then they tested her a second time and said, "Oh my gosh, we didn't realize that you're HIV positive too." And they put her on the medicine, and then she became sick and died. So, you know, this is an old story, sadly, but it's just a story that, you know, I grew up in the AIDS era and I didn't know any of this. This was all kept, you know, completely in the shadows. It's, you know, it's high time that we actually know the full story here.
Yeah, that's powerful. I've heard that about AZT and Fauci's involvement in the whole AIDS scare. And it reminds me of Remdesivir. I mean, it's the same people using the same playbook again. You put these people in the hospital, you vent them, you put them on Remdesivir, their internal organs shut down, they die, you get a bonus. It's just so criminal and nefarious. Well, let's do this call to action here. I want to thank Tom Cohen, first of all, because, you know, he took time out of his day to do this. He's not getting paid to be on here. He just, out of the goodness of his heart, here's his website, drtomcohen.com. Tom, you have a podcast too, correct?
Yep.
How do people find that?
I think everything is on that website, drtomcohen.com. I don't really know, but I think that if they look there, they'll find it.
All right. And I want to just say this for those who want to support the good work that's being done by people like Mike Wallach, The Viral Delusion is right here. I'll leave a link below. You guys can watch the first episode for free. And then if you want to support Mike, I mean, it costs money to make these documentaries. You can watch the entire 5 episodes for $11.99. Mike, anything I'm missing?
I mean, there's so much to tell. I kind of want to read a letter that I got yesterday, if you're up for it.
Yeah, sure.
This is somebody who had just watched the film. Dear Mike, I've been watching The Viral Delusion all afternoon. I've not been disappointed. It's truly amazing. I'm a retired medical technologist with a career spanning the years 71 to 2017. I worked in molecular hematology for a long time and had a 7-year stint in vaccinology at a vaccine control laboratory. I always thought that doing quality control on vaccines meant that you worked independently using a quality control that was not what the WHO told you to use. It just seemed wrong somehow. I'm familiar with a lot of the incorrect techniques discussed by the team in The Viral Delusion, from culturing Vero cells and HEP2 cells for use in measles and polio evaluation to the chemical tests used to evaluate thimerosal. It just makes me sad to know that my whole career has been one massive fraud, from cell culturing to sequencing. I heard, but better late than never. I'm amazed at Drs. Cowan and Lanka and Kaufman and all the rest of these amazing people who've spoken out, placed their careers on the line to get the word out. And though my career was a massive hoax, I will do my best to help wherever I can.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's powerful. Oh, well, congratulations, Mike. I mean, you actually woke up somebody who was part of this system and completely signed on to it and believed everything coming from officialdom. I mean, good on you.
Yeah. You know, I have a sort of, it's been such a positive experience that, you know, I think that the big they make us feel that if we don't participate in what I see really as a cult, that we're going to be banished and isolated and all alone. But what I've actually discovered is that when you don't participate in the cult, there's this fantastic world out there, brilliant, compassionate people. And simply saying no, I'm not going to run off a cliff with these guys, you suddenly discover that, and you look around and you say, wow, there's all these fantastic people all around me. So, you know, I want people to go see the film, and I almost want the film to be an invite to say, hey, you know, join us. It's a pretty awesome community of people out there, scientists, doctors, writers, thinkers, of just people who have open minds, who are just beautiful people. So I want it to be a welcome as well.
Yeah. Well, very well said. I think there is a whole world out there that they don't want us to know about. They don't want us to know that we are winning. We're winning the battle for hearts and minds with truth. That's why I got kicked off of YouTube. That's why I got kicked off of Patreon and Twitter. And that's why the DHS has formed their new disinfo governance board, because we're increasingly looking like some sort of communist hellhole in terms of this illegitimate government, literally targeting truth tellers like Dr. Tom Cowan and you, filmmaker Mike Wallach. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for coming on, and thanks for all your good work. And friends, thank you so much for tuning in. A special thank you to our subscribe stars and our members at sgtreport.tv. Thanks for keeping us in the fight for truth and real news. And for real news every single day for free, visit us directly at sgtreport.com. That's the antidote to corporate propaganda. God bless you and your family. Bye-bye.
People are dying because they don't have the truth, the solutions. They don't understand who Bill Gates is. They don't understand who Fauci is, what he's doing. They don't understand the Great Reset, Klaus Schwab. They don't understand the World Economic Forum, all these things. And we cover these things in depth.